time to dim the lights and open your minds. Let yourself go. Travel along the many roads that populate the vast landscape of the paranormal on Parachallenged Radio with your host, PC. Parachallenged Radio is a Jackalope Radio production. Join us in the chat at www.parachallengedradio.com, or you can go to jackaloperadio.com in the shows area and click on the Parachallenged Radio banner. Don't miss the fun every Tuesday night, right here on Jackalope Radio. And now, your host into the wild world of the beyond, PC.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Parachallenged Radio with your host, PC, and her co-host, Brian Easterwood.
Welcome back to another wonderful Tuesday evening with Parachallenged Radio. Without further ado, I'm here with my co-host, Brian Easterwood.
Todd, hi, everybody.
The drive-through hostage sheets.
It's true. I was the hostage, but I'm free now, and they still got my order wrong. Thanks, Arby's.
I'm glad you got out of there unscathed.
I did. I'm alive and well and ready to talk to our guest for the night, Rick McCallum. What an amazing guy, part of the Hollywood Ghost Hunters. Welcome to the show, Rick.
My pleasure.
All right, I got to ask the first question, guys. Rick, what was it that got one of the greatest stuntmen in Hollywood history into the paranormal?
Well, actually, I lived in a very, very haunted house in Texas about 30 years ago. And as it got more and more active, I got more and more interested in it to the point where I would go out on location or any time I would know there was a haunted place near me, I'd sneak over there and take a look. After a while, I wanted to start my own group, but it took a long time until I found somebody that, you know, wouldn't run away if, you know, a bug sneezed, you know. So once I met up with Kane, which is a funny story, you know, about ghost hunting, that's when he and I got started ghost hunting, was actually we're at Mansfield Prison in Ohio, where they did the Shawshank Redemption. And we were out walking. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and we were way back in the cell blocks, and we were walking back by ourselves. Everybody else was gone.
You were shooting the movie Fallen Angels there.
Yeah, we weren't actually incarcerated at that place. A few other places we had spent a little time, but not there. So we're walking back from you know, shooting, and just a little moonlight coming in there. And I look up ahead of me down at the end of the cell block, and I see a shadow man. And I turn over to say to Kane, you know, look down there. And when I turn around, because he'd been behind me, I turn around, and he's gone. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, great, the big scary Jason guy ran away, right? And I look down, and he's running like at a full sprint towards it, right?
Oh, that's awesome. He goes
running around the corner, and I know I'm never going to catch up to him. So I went running around the other side of the cell block, and we kind of met up on the other side. And he said, where'd it go? And I said, it didn't go by me. So right then he says, you know, we got to come back tomorrow and find that thing. I said, well, I'm in. So right then I knew, okay, if there's anybody that I want to help, you know, ghost hunt with, it's got to be Kane. I mean, I've been looking for someone that will run towards the ghost as opposed to running away, dude.
And the other place you were talking about while we were getting ready for the show here was Sloss Furnace.
Oh, that whole thing about ice cold feeling and stuff, it's really true. We were in the underground tunnel. And we were getting responses off the K2 meter. We were getting all five light responses to what I was asking. Matter of fact, this is on our website, HollywoodGhostHunters.com. You can see the whole thing at Sloss Furnace. But one of our other guys, Steve Nappy, who is like 6'4 and 280 pounds, walks up behind me, and he's looking over my shoulder at me and the K2 meter. And I asked something there. I said, do you want to leave here? And it went crazy. And I said, well, do you want me to help you? And it went crazy. And right then, Steve smashed into me from behind and knocked me about 3 or 4 feet. And I turned around, and he was kind of staggering. And I looked at him, I said, what the hell? And he goes, somebody shoved me from behind. And there's nobody down there but us. You know, it's a very strange place. A little later on, we all went back down there, Kane, myself, Steve, you know, we all went back down. And if you go to Sloss, there's in the tunnel, there's a grating system because there's water that comes in, and the grates are about 3 feet apart. So we would be walking up and down that all night. And we had like 7 or 8 people walking down this thing to go, you know, as we were leaving. And as we stopped, one of the guys turns around, one of the guests is with us, and he goes, what is that? And we look back, and there's a book right in the middle of the grading system, right where we were walking. Somebody would have seen it. Somebody would have tripped over it. I mean, we were all walking on it. Couldn't have missed it. So we go over and pick it up, and there's actually a Bible. And we looked at it, and on the inside it was inscribed, it says, "Stay strong." How that got there, I have no idea. Don't know where it came from.
That is interesting and creepy in a way.
Well, what's strange is that I looked back over our footage, and you can see us walking up and down there, and it's not there.
In the video, it's not there. It just appeared there out of nowhere.
It's just there when we're leaving. Yeah, it was strange.
Oh, man.
So Sloth's Furnace definitely is really, really interesting.
I'll have to check that out when I get a chance to.
Yeah, I'll go with you. I want to go back.
There you go. We'll plan something up.
Yeah, I
feel safe going there. We'll get Kane to go with us, too.
Yeah, if I ever get a chance to go back to one place, they said you can go, it would be Sloth's Furnaces.
Man. Oh, man.
Definitely a really cool place. The other place I want to go to, if anybody's listening that can get me in there, I want to go to the Edinburgh Vaults over in Scotland. I want to get down there, and I want to stay overnight by myself in the place where nobody wants to be.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've heard that's the place where everybody gets scratched and attacked at right there, isn't it?
Yeah. Actually, you know, it's funny you bring that up because one of the girls that was with us at Sloth's Furnace, we were standing there, her and her husband and myself, and she starts kind of looking kind of uncomfortable. I said, "What's wrong?" She goes, "My back is burning. Like I leaned up against something." Now, we're standing out in the middle of the field. There's nothing there, right? And her husband goes, "Well, let me look." And he lifts up her shirt, you know, in the back, and he goes, "Look at this." And she had 4 scratch marks, like your fingers, right down her back. So,
oh, man.
So Sloss is very active. Highly recommended to anybody who can get in there.
Yeah.
I'm creeped out already. I don't even want to go now.
I dream. Sure. No.
Well, if you're only wearing your tighty whities, I wouldn't go there either.
Brian.
Yeah, Brian, make sure you may wear more than your tighty whities to Sloss, please.
Yeah, that'd be pretty scary running around with that in the dark, you know.
Well, at least they'd know where you were. I'm
It'd
sure
be scary,
you'd
but not for
a
you.
Glow to you, Brian.
See Kane turn around the other corner and see me.
It would be scary for the ghosts, and I think even Kane would run if he saw you and Tidy Whitey.
I think I would too.
You said that'd be worried about you.
I mean, there's some things I want to see in the dark. A guy in his tidy whities is not right near the top of the list.
I love it.
Poor Brian.
Rick, what is for your personal taste as an investigator of the paranormal? What are the tools you like to use the most? What are the things you like to bring with you on an investigation?
Well, there's 3 things I got to have if I'm going on an investigation: night vision camera, a K2 meter, and a voice recorder. I mean, if I got those 3, then I'm good. I mean, we use other things. You know, we use the spirit box, you know, things like that. But if I just those 3 things, I think are the key staples that you need. You know, because with the K2, you can tell if there's any EMF coming in, you know, where there hasn't been any. So that kind of alerts you to stuff that might be there. The voice recorder, you can capture, you know, the EVPs, which we've gotten some really good ones. And, you know, with the night vision camera, you can catch some really interesting things. By the way, once again, shameless plug by me. On our website, thehollywoodghosthunters.com, if you go to evidence and look up Hallway Evidence 1 and Hallway Evidence 2, they're both about 30 seconds, and you'll see some stuff the night vision camera caught that'll make you go, huh?
Definitely going to do that. Actually, I'm looking at that page right now as we speak.
Yeah, go to Hallway Evidence. Go to Evidence and Hallway Evidence 1, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And both of these were in a totally empty house.
Oh, wow.
I can't see it. I'm streaming. That's no fair.
That sounds like a personal problem, Todd.
I'm keeping the show on the air over here. I can't do it. Darn it.
That's just dirty, Todd.
Actually, I streamed before you guys called, you know, just in case.
Oh, good. I'm glad everybody got their stream on before the show.
Oh, Lord. Get your stream on. Parachallenge Radio.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Yeah,
I can see T-shirts.
Yeah, that's next. I'll have to do that after the show. I will.
As long as you have the guy in the tidy whities, that's it.
Oh, my goodness.
He's a mascot.
Oh, yeah, kind of, sort of, huh? Rick, Dream Investigations, where do you want to go? What do you want to see?
Oh, absolutely, Edinburgh Vaults.
Yeah.
See, I'm actually Scottish, so to be part of my roots, and there's just something about that place that calls out to me. I mean, I don't know why, I just know I'm supposed to go there. And it's one of those weird feelings that you don't know why you have it.
Right.
But I want to go there. I want to go to one. I can't remember which one it was. It was actually on Ghost Hunters. And I think it might have been the Edinburgh Vaults, or it might have been in London, where they had all the mannequins down at the bottom of, the catacombs. And nobody wanted to go in there because...
Oh,
the
yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to go in there. Yeah,
that would have creeped me out with those mannequins in there, though, too.
Oh, I don't care. They're mannequins. But that's the place I want to go.
My
husband
would come to life and smack me in the back of the head.
Yeah, well, they get you in the back of the head, you won't see it coming. So what difference
exactly
does it make?
Exactly. I guess you're right. You're right.
Yeah, but see, the way I look at things, I am ghost hunting, not ghost having a good time walking around in the dark. and if there happens to be something down there, I want to find it. And if it happens to be big and scary, all the better.
Well, I'm really That's not right. a ghost hunter. I'm a survivor.
She's a ghost talker.
I had to walk to my living room and find a ghost. It really wasn't difficult. So, yeah.
I have one in my apartment that's as creepy as anything I've ever come across.
Really? Like what? Mm-hmm. What's it doing?
Well, actually, one night I came out here and something came through the wall at my legs about the size of a Doberman. Right? It was just like a shape. And I just reacted and jumped out of the way. And there was nothing there. So I went back and forth. I lived in this apartment for 20 years. So I walked back and forth trying to make a shadow or anything that could make that. Never seen it before. Haven't seen it since. Walked into the bathroom, and as I came out of the wall right next to me, a thing about the size of a football and like a black shape came right at my face. So later on, I went in. I was on the computer, and I got up to go get a drink of water. And as I walked into my, towards my kitchen, something stood up in front of me, and I could see the shape, the outline, because it was backlit. And it actually blocked out the light on the microwave, so I knew it wasn't imagination. There was something there. And it went up, and I'm 6'4" and 270 pounds. And I was like its little brother when it stood up. So we just stood there about 10 feet apart, and I knew it was staring at me, and I was staring back at it because I had my fists up. I thought it was a burglar, because I saw it start to stand up. I thought, uh-oh. And I'm standing there, and I'm thinking to myself, well, now what? What do you do now? So I just hopped over and I hit the light, and there was nothing there. But it is here. And, the girl that I mentioned earlier, Maritza Skandunas,
mm-hmm.
Was actually on the phone with me one time, and she asked me about the shape I saw. And I started swearing and calling it out and calling it a punk and show up, turn into a guy and I'll kick your butt, the whole, trying to provoke it. And she starts screaming. She's going, oh, my God, oh, my God. I said, Maritza, what's wrong? She goes, you didn't hear it? And I said, hear what? And she goes, in the phone behind you, I heard. I went, that's just his punk ass, right? So she actually heard this thing growling at me. That's one of the growls that I was talking about. So that's something.
Wow.
There's something interesting in here, and he's not nice, and he's not fun, and it's.
You think it's somebody? Totes, huh? Think it's somebody that came home with you?
No, actually, I think I kind of invited it in, to tell you the truth.
Oh.
I was writing a script, and there's a part in there where the bad guy says, if you accept Satan, I'll spare you. And the guy pulls a crucifix out and sticks it in his face. He goes, screw you, I already made my choice. And I think all that stuff happened that night, right after I wrote that. So I wonder if something was trying to send me a message.
Oh, wow. Crazy.
But I sent it back a message right back. I ain't afraid of you.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. So
by the way,
us,
have you guys noticed that when we go ghost hunting, we might have fun?
You might just have a little bit.
Yeah.
You might.
I will tell you a cute Danielle Harris story, though.
Okay, go for
she,
it.
She was the heroine in Hatchet 2.
Right.
And she's also was in Rob Zombie's Halloween, and she's a legitimate scream queen, right? We were in Linda Vista, and we're walking along, and they were filming us from behind. And I stopped. I said, hold on, I hear something. They said, what? I said, I hear voices. And sometimes in a long hallway, you'll hear the sound go across the roof, right? That's how it'll travel down the hallway. Mm-hmm. And I'm standing there, I'm listening. I said, I hear muffled talking. And she goes, I don't hear anything. And right next to us in this room was very clearly a woman's voice said something. And she looked at me, she goes, heard that, bye.
Oh, really?
Yeah, heard that, bye. She was actually standing with me when there was a growl right in between us at Linda Vista Hospital. And there was a sound girl and a producer standing with us. And neither one of them heard it. And I just looked over at Danielle, and her little eyes were real big. And I said, did you hear that? And she goes, the growl? And I said, yeah. And I asked the two guys, people, I said, you hear that? I said, oh, we didn't hear anything. I said, it was right here in between the four of us. How did you miss it? And one person was a sound person. You think they would have heard it.
So tell us about your work in Hollywood. Let everybody know what's going on in Hollywood movie-wise and what you've been doing.
Well, actually, Kane is getting ready to do Hatchet 3. That's coming up. I'm supposed to be working on a movie in Northern California coming up here shortly. You know, the rest of our guys, Adam Green, his TV show, Holliston, comes out tonight on FearNet. Robert Pendergraft, another one of our guys, is going to Hatchet 3. So is Jason Miller, another one of our guys, is working on that. So, actually, what was really funny is on Hatchet 2, without really trying, is that we had nine of our people working on Hatchet 3, or Hatchet 2, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I love the Hatchet series, too. That's just the serial killer's back with a vengeance, you know, with that. And it's just the good gore fest, the good fun gore movies you used to get back in the 80s. Well, it just seems like it's that all over again.
Well, people ask me about Kane a lot. And they'll say, you know, is he anything like, you know, Jason Voorhees or Victor Crowley? And they say, honestly, he's worse. You know, I said, you know, it's a good thing he gets all the killing and vengeance out of his system and all these things. You know, he actually wrote a book called Unmasked, True Life Story of a Serial Killer. And it's his life story, and it's fascinating. But in there, he talks about how he has killed more people on screen than anybody in the history of the movies.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
I do remember him saying that when we interviewed him. I do remember that.
Yeah,
that is awesome.
It's a fascinating book. I mean, like I said, I've known him since 1981. And, you know, I found out some stuff in that I didn't know, and it was kind of shocking.
Wow. Yeah. Definitely quite a story there. But you've done stunt work for even Captain Spaulding and the Devil's Rejects, and give us a rundown, Rick. You've been a busy guy.
Yeah, I've actually had pretty good luck doubling a lot of the horror icons. I mean, I've actually doubled Kane, and once again, I say this, Kane doesn't need doubling, but sometimes when I've doubled him, he's actually been playing another character, so, you know, he was off somewhere else, and somebody had to do the other part. And Ari Mihailov, who plays Leatherface, I've doubled him. I've doubled Captain Spaulding. You know, things like that. Captain Spaulding was really kind of interesting. At the very end of the movie, where they're in the Cadillac racing towards the people, and they're all getting shot, and they're shooting and things like that, I was standing up in the back of the Cadillac. The Cadillac's going like 60 or 70, and I'm standing up in the back. Never hire stuntmen because they're smart. Anyway. But the director tells us, he goes, now look, here's what you do. When you get to this fence, you know, this telephone pole, start shooting. When you get to the next telephone pole down there, start taking the reactions of being shot. So the stunt girl and I, and Chris Carnell, by the way, who played the minor, my buddy Valentine, 3D, is also in our group, and he was the guy driving the car. He was doubling Bill Moseley.
Oh, wow.
So, and then Leslie Aletter was doubling Sherry Moon. So we're racing down there, and she's blasting away, and you know, Chris is shooting over the top of the thing, and I'm standing up blasting away with the shotgun. And then we hit the other mark where we're supposed to start taking the reactions, and we're all getting shot and bouncing around the car and everything else. And the car rolls up to a stop where all the deputies are all lined up. And the director runs down and yells, "Cut!" He goes, "That was fantastic, except for one thing." And we said, "What was that?" He goes, "None of those people up there were shooting." So we're losing light, and they say, okay, let's do it again. So here we come, we're flying along, and we get to the place where we're supposed to take the reactions, and there's no little puffs of smoke coming from the front of them, right? So I'm standing in the thing, and I just yelled, "Shoot us!" Then all of a sudden, boom, 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 boom. Like, yeah, come on.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, so that was really cool. Sid Haig, by the way, is really nice. He's a great guy.
Yeah, he's a frequent on Night Watch.
Yep, he's one of my buddies. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's really cool. Matter of fact, he says something. If you ever saw the behind-the-scenes things, when he sees me and he walks by, he looks at me. He uses a few more expletives, but he looks at me and he goes, "Man, somebody screwed you up." And I'm saying they're all bloody like him, you know. So that was pretty funny.
Oh, wow. That is awesome. That is so awesome.
Yeah, I'm one of the few guys though in Hollywood that works on a lot of horror movies that don't really watch them.
You don't watch them, really?
No, not really. I'm just, you know, I've seen it. I get it. Yeah.
I guess you've seen enough blood and gore by the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've done like 50 movies where we've decapitated people, run swords through them, you know, ate them alive. You know, it's a, you know.
You got the whole different perspective on that than the rest of us do.
Well, you know what? You know what? A lot of people don't understand is when you've been doing movies for a long time, that as you're standing there, you're sitting there watching the show, right? And all of a sudden, you look in the background and you see like you know, guys you know that all do fight scenes. You go, well, here it comes. You know, and you know the guys in the background are all the fight guys. Here it comes. So it kind of. It's not as much fun to watch movies after you know how they make them. Let's put it that way.
Oh, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
It's probably not as fun to make them anymore, as you know, since they put all the CGI stuff in there. It takes a lot out of the special effects guys, the stuntmen, and all that. And
that's true.
You know,
when CGI first started, we loved it because, you know, when you were using like the jerk cables and stuff like that, or you had to fly somebody over something, it was really hard to get rid of the cables. And when CGI came out and you could get rid of the cables, I mean, then, you know, you could do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And now they can actually do us, you know. So that's a little too good.
Yeah, it went a little too far there. And I mean, they've actually, you know, we saw that mainly after Brandon Lee got killed doing The Crow. You know, they CGI'd his face onto another actor, and they finished the movie up. And a lot of people didn't know that.
Yeah, but what they can do now is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And when it gets to the point where they can make a totally realistic person for less than they can pay us, we're done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's sad to see, too, you know, because it's not only that, but the special effects, like the gore special effects artists and stuff, like guys like Tom Savini and all that, you know, that's, you know, even though it didn't look as realistic as some of the CGI stuff, it was still an art to that.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, one of our guys is Robert Pendergraft. He owns Aunt Dolly's Garage Special Effects, and he's the one that did all the special effects on Hatchet 2.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
So he's another one of our members. He's actually our biggest member, believe it or not. I mean, you've got R.A. who's 6'5 and 315 pounds, and then you've got the special effects guy who's 6'6 and 320.
Oh, wow. Awesome. And it's R.A.'s birthday today, isn't it?
It is indeed.
I was going to post on his wall, but I see he still hasn't accepted my friend request, so I just sent him a nice little message.
Hopefully, well, he will. As soon as he sees it, you know, I know he will. Actually, we're going to a party for him tonight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, send him our best.
You know, well, we're really going just, you know, because, you know, he's getting older and we want to make sure that he gets out to his car.
You know. Oh, I love it.
That is awesome.
I can get away with that because he's only 9 months older than me.
Oh,
I feel like bringing a walker and giving it to him, but
he might get clubbed with it.
Yeah, but I'm a lot faster than he is. He's big and strong, but I can run away.
So how often do you guys get together and go investigate? I can imagine with your schedules, it's just crazy.
It's hard. It really is. You know, cause Kane has gone a lot. I mean, he's always at the conventions or he's doing a movie somewhere out of town. And, you know, so he's, and he had the book tour that he was out on. So he was gone quite a bit. And then Adam will be doing something, you know, Danielle will be doing a movie or is at a convention. So, you know, we do get out, as often as we can, you know, so, frankly, finding places in L.A. If there's anybody listening around L.A. that knows some good places, send it to our website. another shameless plug. You know, so that we can find some more places because, you know, I've been hunting them down myself. And it's getting now, with the popularities of the TV shows, that any place that has any kind of haunting wants, you know, an extraordinary amount of money to go there.
Right.
You know, so.
Right. Yeah, it's making it more difficult to find a legit place even. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure there are more than, you know, a few locations that claim to be haunted just to charge the charges and, you know.
I'm sure there is. We actually got, there's another TV show, I won't say the name of it, but producer called and said, here's what I want to do. I want you guys to go ghost hunting, and we are going to have a lot of money, you know, for the group that finds the best evidence of something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, now where would we be going? They said, well, the place, people's houses that, you know, seem to think they have haunted stuff. And whichever group comes up with the best evidence and the house that comes up with the best evidence will get the money. And I told him, I said, I don't think we would like to participate in that. And he goes, well, why not? And I said, well, let's see. First off, you've got groups that will get a lot of money if they actually have something, you know, happen. I said, and, you know, that can cause people to not exactly be as upfront and truthful as they might be.
Well, it leaves a lot of room for tampering.
Yeah, I said, and the second part is the people at the house that you're going to go to who you've never met are also going to get a lot of money if you find something. I said, I don't really want to be involved in that. And the guy goes, well, you don't understand. Exactly. This is what we're going to do. And I was like, well, no, you understand. This is what we're not going to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to give you major props for not doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, no, that's just stupid. You know, that opens your group up to, you know, all kinds of things. Actually, when we started the group, one of the ideas behind our group was with the people we have in there, you know, we have directors, CGI guys, special effects guys, stuntmen, actors, writers, lighting guys, you know, we've got everybody in the movie business that if we go to a haunted location, you're not going to fool us. If you give us a piece of tape that you think is that our CGI guy is going to catch you, you know? So, you know, you're not going to fool us. You know, a lot of people say, well, you guys could make your own evidence. I say, well, yeah, we could. You'd never notice either, but that's not the way we are.
But what's the point?
What, yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, I tell them quite nicely, I said, we already make movies.
Exactly. You know, what do you need to make more for?
Yeah, we don't need to go make a movie. We already do movies where we fake everything. This is actual ghost hunting. We do it because we like it.
Yeah, and if you fake something like that, it's just, you know, you're not doing anything or making any kind of progress, and you're not getting the Phil's not going to get the recognition it needs from scientists and people like that that would, you know, could come across and bridge that gap between something spiritual and something scientific.
Yeah, I mean, it's a... Well, you talk about scientific and spiritual. I was just at a friend's house not too long ago, and she had said that she had spirits in her house. She could feel them, and you know, which is a big part of it. If you have a feeling they're there, they probably are. Anyway, we went out there. Kane and I went out there, and there was a couple of their friends there. And Kane and the one guy went in the back room, and we're having a really good session with his grandfather. The K2 was answering, and we're getting. I don't know if you guys have come across this. The only time it happened that night was in this room. Whenever we would ask if it was his grandfather, there was a pulse that was going through the voice recorder. It was going, vroom, vroom, vroom. You know, and every time he asked, it would do that. And,
oh, wow.
You know, the same voice recorder, all through the other thing, before and after, didn't do it except for when he was asking that, which was really cool. But the part about the spiritual thing that you're talking about and the ghost hunting, we were able to discover that there were three spirits in there by asking questions and using the K2 to get the answers. And I said, is there anybody here that wants to cross over? And the thing lit up all five lights. And I said, okay, let me, and the girls were like, oh my God. And I said, well, wait a minute, just because it does it once doesn't mean you got an answer. I said, is there anybody here that wants to cross over? If there is, light it all up again. And instantly it went all five lights. So we started talking to it, and I said, all right, do you want to cross over? And it does. I said, all right, now listen to me. And I told it, you know, how to go to the light and everything else, not to be afraid. And I said, what I want to see on here is I ask you questions as you're going. I want to see this go from five lights down to three so I know that you're moving away from me. And it went down to three. So then I went, all right, you understand what I'm saying? You know, I want this to go down, okay? And then on my voice recorder, there's a voice that goes, okay. So that was pretty cool. And
amazing.
Then I said,
oh, that is awesome.
Yeah, but there's more. then I said, are you there? And we got no response. I said, have you crossed over? And right then behind the one girl, I heard a voice, and she did too. And I turned around and looked. I said, you hear something? She goes, I heard somebody say goodbye.
Oh, man.
So the spiritual and the scientific and all that can, you know, intermingle.
Right.
Absolutely.
I think that was my favorite investigation right there, because I'm pretty convinced something happened.
Yeah.
That's right.
A lot of people just want to do the scientific thing, and they don't want to get psychics involved and all that other stuff. If you get a legit psychic and you're doing some, you know, you're doing EVP work and got a psychic there, and they said they feel like a little girl there and her name's so-and-so, and, you know, you get through on the tape, it's just proved both sides there, and you've got evidence to back both things up.
Yeah. You know, I got, this is a funny story. I got invited up to the Palomino Club in Las Vegas to ghost hunt. Now, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Palomino Club, but it's a very famous strip bar. So I went up there because, you know, I have another company. Its offices are in Vegas, and I was going up there. I said, all right, when I go up there, I'll come over. So I went over there, and they showed me around, and they said, the upstairs dressing room for the girls, they don't use anymore because they got scared. They didn't want to go there anymore. So anyway, I went in there. First off, I found out a couple things about ghost hunting at a strip bar, because the strip bar was working. Is that, number one, I'm very easily distracted.
Oh, you really? No.
Yeah, well, look at you over there. Oh, look at you over there. No, over there. Wait. anyway, I finally went up and locked myself in this dressing room, and I set up my laser grid, and I had the K2 meter out and the voice recorder and the camera going and everything else. And I'm sitting there, and I get a feeling when something's around. It's like water down the back of my neck and in my back. You know, you just kind of get that wet feeling. And I was like, ah, somebody's here. Come closer. And then the K2 meter started going off. I said, come closer. And it came off and went up higher and higher. And I said, all right, I know you're here. What's your name? Nothing on the recorder. I said, come on, I know you're here. Who's here? And a little girl's voice said, it's me.
Really?
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I found this back when I was at home. So I called up the guy that owns the place. I said, Adam, why did you stop using the upper thing? And they said, well, they kept seeing a little girl up there, and it was freaking them out. And so I got news for you, bud. She's still up there.
Oh, wow.
He actually will play that EVP in the strip club every once in a while.
Really?
Yeah, for all the people. And then he goes, by the way, you hear about it being haunted here. Listen to this.
Wow. Little kid trapped in a strip joint. Poor baby.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's
all kinds of great
boy.
Stuff about
Bob,
huh?
He might have been happy.
Oh, exactly, exactly. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that was one of that kind of wrenches at your heart a little bit when you know there's a little kid stuck up there.
Yeah.
You know, next time I'm up in Vegas, I'm going to go over there and see what I can do.
Yeah, maybe you'll have success helping her cross over.
I hope so. Help her find her people, or have her people find her.
Exactly. Wow. Awesome, Rick. Very awesome.
What's going on with you, movie-wise? What's new with the movies, Rick?
Now, which newest movies? Let's see, that we've actually worked on or got coming up is the ones coming up are Hatchet and the one in Northern California. Ones that we've just worked on. I just worked on a movie called J. Edgar. It was Clint Eastwood's movie, which was really cool because I got to meet Clint. I'd never met him before.
Oh, cool.
Did you make his day?
Made my day. it was kind of funny. My friend introduced me to him. And he said, Clint, this is my friend Rick. He's been around a long time, and I've known him for a long time. And Clint looks at me and he goes, so you've been around a long time, have you? And I looked at him, and I kind of pointed at my gray hair, and I said, well, Clint, this isn't paint, right? And he looks at me and he goes, so you've known Buddy a long time. I said, I'm not going to answer that. And he goes, why not? And I said, because if I say yes, you might throw my ass off the set. You know, they're like really, really good friends. You know, but Clint was so genuine, such a real guy. Real pleasure to meet him. I can't say that about all the actors I've met either.
Oh, really?
I can't tell you who they are, but there's some out there that just ain't really up to snuff. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure you have more stories than you know what to do with.
I have met some really cool people. Chuck Norris was incredible. Greg Evigan was a great guy. You know, Clint was a great guy. Pretty much everybody I've run across has been pretty nice, but there's been a couple boobs in there. But I think you'll find just as many boobs down at the local office, you know, complex.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, anywhere you get involved with the public or anybody else, you're going to run into a bad egg or two. We do it here in the paranormal field all the time.
Well, I got to do sit around your tidy whities. That'll scare them off.
Yeah, there you go. I'll post pics of some.
He pretty much hates me by now, doesn't he?
No, you know, actually, he enjoys the attention. I'm surprised he hasn't told you got a pretty mouth yet. Because that hasn't come out this show yet.
Todd's got a pretty mouth.
Yeah, I got lips like a woman. I laughed so hard when he told me that. I couldn't believe it.
Oh. I don't know how you didn't laugh. I don't know how you didn't laugh sitting there.
Oh, well, the whole show was like that.
Oh, my gosh. You look like you were fighting so hard not to laugh. It was hilarious.
And as much as I love to talk, I'm the one that, you know, I actually think Adam Green wrote the parts in the movie for each person individually. When he sat down to write it, he goes, okay, I want, you know, R.A. to play the hunter guy. I want Rick to play the other hunter guy. And I want this guy to do this. And I want Rick to just be quiet for a while.
Oh, we are almost out of time. Can you believe it? I can't.
No!
No, I know. Rick, let everybody know how to get a hold of you if they want to, you know, ask you questions or get your advice.
Shameless plug number four?
Exactly. We're all about the shameless plugs.
Yeah, no, if they go to HollywoodGhostHunters.com, there's a contact us, and everything that they put on there comes directly to me. So if you have any places that you think we might want to hunt, or if you had anything interesting happen to you or anything like that, just send it along.
Awesome.
And I answer everything.
Are you going to take care of that one little piece of business there, Todd?
I am. Rick, we've got to have you do a little promo for us here for the show. We've got to do it. You know, anything you want to do, we'll let you be creative and just run with it.
How long do you need it?
Just a short little, you know, maybe 10, 15, 20 seconds. Anything you want. You could make it a week long and I'd still play it.
All right. Tell me when to go.
Anytime.
Hi, this is Rick from the Hollywood Ghost Hunters. You know, the group that has, you know, Jason Voorhees, Kane Hodder, and Ari Mihailov, you know, Leatherface. If you don't listen to this show, we're going to come to your house. And when we come to your house, we're going to eat all your food. So just listen.
Yay!
Yay!
All right.
Will that work for you?
That's very nice. That's very nice. I want to thank you for taking time out and joining this wonderful show here and for always being such a great guy, Rick. I mean, I loved having you on Night Watch, and I just absolutely loved having you here, too.
Anytime. I like to talk. So, you know, it's always good to, you know, tell people about our group. So, my pleasure.
Oh, it was great to have you, Rick. Really a good time, and I hope to have you back in the future.
Well, like I say, anytime. And, like, if you want any of our other guys, I'll see if I can hook them up for you, too.
Yeah, we'll get you and Kane on here together sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Very
well, thanks so much, and keep in touch. We'll talk soon, I hope.
Yes, and I, you know, sorry, I hate to say this, but go Packers!
Yay! Go Pack, go!
That's awesome. That's the way it should be.
Exactly. Right, thanks for being a cheesehead.
Yay!
Sweet.
Cheeseheads rule.
Yeah, cheesehead will save your life, too.
That's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
It actually did. You know that, don't you?
No.
A guy was in a small single-engine plane, and it lost power, and it was crashing, and the guy reached in the back and grabbed his cheese head and put it over his face and his head, and the windshield broke in, and it stuck in the cheese head and saved his life.
Oh, wow. I didn't hear that one.
Yeah,
that is,
so, you know,
that is awesome.
Cheese head safety, yes.
Exactly. It should be required headwear in any vehicle, any mode of transportation, see?
Well, at least in Wisconsin.
Well, yeah, of course.
You know. That's the only place that anywhere cheesehead, not look out of place. Wisconsin great wear. Cheesehead, bowling shirt, you're good.
Well, it's almost time to put the winter lingerie away, the flannel, so that's good.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk soon, Rick. Thank you so very much for coming on the show and spending some time with us and,
well,
and sharing your stories.
Me, guys. Yeah, all right. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Keep in touch. We'll talk soon.
Bye.
Bye. Wow, that was awesome. What a great
cool
interview.
Stuff.
He's a cool guy, you know.
One of the best.
Real easy to talk with and real laid back. Don't go away, everybody, because in the second half, we have another great guest for you. Sean Whalen, actor, writer, director. You might have seen him in Twister, Jury Duty. He was Cara Wayne Bishop in Jury Duty. That was funny. I like that movie. And People Under the Stairs, he was Roach. So don't go away. We'll be back right after this quick break. You're listening to Parachallenge Radio right here on Jackalope Radio. Be right back.
You can't have it. Welcome to Parachallenge Radio News, PCRN. My name is Brian Watley. This is your news segment for this ghostly Tuesday night. Your dead-on top news stories are...
About Ghosts of Iraq, Haunting CIA, My Real Mother is a Green Alien, Hip Hop and Metaphysics, and the ACM Awards 2012. Our first story tonight is Ghosts of Iraq, Haunting CIA, and Tackling Iran. Brought to us on April the 2nd, 2012 by James Risen, and you can find this on www.post-gazette.com. Yeah, one CIA analyst who has helped develop some of the intelligence about Saddam Hussein's supposed weapons of mass destruction had a breakdown months after the Iraq war began. He had participated in a post-invasion hunt where there was thought that they had found weapons, but they did not exist. When he eventually was given a new assignment assessing Iran's nuclear program, he confided a fear to colleagues that the intelligence community might get it wrong again. He felt enormous guilt that he had gotten us into the war, said one former official who worked with the analysts, and he was afraid it was going to be deja vu all over again. Today, analysts and others at the CIA who are struggling to understand the nuclear ambitions of Iran are keenly aware that the agency's credibility is again on the line amid threats of new military interventions. And the intelligence debacle on Iraq has deeply influenced the way they do their work, with new safeguards intended to force analysts to be more skeptical in evaluating evidence and more cautious in drawing conclusions. But former intelligence officials say that this shows appropriate vigilance in dealing with often murky information, while some detractors argue that the agency is just not careful but also overly skittish on Iran, reluctant to be blamed for any findings that might lead to the United States to bloodshed. Well, you know, there are a lot of people in the intelligence community, and there's a feeling that they don't want to repeat the same mistake, said Greg Tillman, a former State Department intelligence analyst who resigned to protest what he considered the Bush administration's politicization of the pre-war Iraq intelligence, and that intelligence community as a whole has a better practices now, partly because of the scar tissue they still have from Iraq. Who, well, now Thiemann is a senior fellow at the Arms Control Association in Washington, but Paul Pillar, a former senior CIA analyst on the Middle East, says he believes that the analysts are guilted by the facts in making their assessments about Iran, but that they are most certainly have Iraq weighing on them. Well, because intelligence officials are human beings, one cannot rule out the possibility of the tendency to overcompensate for past errors, said Mr. Pillar, now the director of graduate studies at the Security Studies Program at Georgetown University. Well, you know what they say? For show notes here, those who can, do, and those who can't, teach at Georgetown University. Anyway, wow, the ghosts of Iraq are haunting them. Our next story is My Real Mother is a Green Alien, English Politician Says. This is brought to us on March the 31st, written by Stuart Minting, and you can find this on jacksonsun.com. Yes, this is coming out of Darlington, England. Labor Day member Simon Parks, who was elected to represent the Starksby Ward on Whitby Council last month, says that although he had hundreds of close encounters with extraterrestrials, it would not interfere with his missions to help residents at the seaside resort. Speaking on YouTube, Parks said his first seeing of an alien at the age of 8 months, when a traditional kite-shaped face with huge eyes, tiny nostrils, and a thin mouth appeared over his cot. Well, two green stick things came in, he said, and I was aware of some movement over my head. I thought, that's not mommy's hands. Mommy's hands are pink. He added, I was looking straight into its face. It entered my mind through my eyes, and it sends a message down my optic nerve into my brain, and it says, I am your real mother. I am your more important mother. Mark said extraterrestrial beliefs did not come up on the doorstep while he was campaigning recently. It's a personal matter and it doesn't affect my work, he said. I'm more interested in fixing someone's leaky roofs or potholes. Well, people don't want me to talk about aliens. Council member Terry Jennison said a fellow Stakesby Ward member and former mayor of Whitby said that the matter had not been discussed by council members. And he said, I am completely in the dark about this. And for show notes, if he can remember that far back as a baby that aliens come in and entered something to his optic nerve through his brain stem and all that good stuff, well, you know, vote him in. That's a pretty bright guy, I guess. Our next story is hip-hop and metaphysics. One man with two passions. And this is posted in Iowa City, and it's brought to us on April the 1st, 2012, and the author is Shane O'Shaughnessy. And you can find this on iowacityowl.com. If you walk through the pedestrian mall of Iowa City regularly, then you've really undoubtedly seen Tyrell spit with headphones on, rapping to himself and for everybody. His energy and determination are incredible, and once you meet him, you'll realize there is also a deep intelligence and love for expression behind his lyrical flow. Talk to him further, and you'll find that Tyrell is a self-taught metaphysics master and a main proponent behind the hip-hop scene here in town. We sat down in the Tobacco Bowl to talk about his life since moving from Harbor, Illinois in 2002. I moved here to sell crack cocaine, because that's what everyone else was doing in my hometown. I was never caught and stopped selling shortly after coming to Iowa City because I didn't want to do it anymore. I wanted to devote myself to learning and to my art. Well, his enthusiasm for learning and his pursuit into the business side of hip-hop garnered the attention of Joseph Sulik, who's a tutor at the University of Iowa's Papa John's Business Building, who paid for business courses for Tyrell at the Siemens Center. And this opportunity gave him the first steps toward his current project, The New Dance Party. And as to further this information about his life, he had to say, "I want everyone to know that I miss my family and that he's planning on sticking out his studies and still giving in to the metaphysics on the hip-hop side." I could break a beat down to you. Okay, that's about all I had there. Okay. And our last story, coming to us on Monday, April the 2nd, by the Associated Press, ACM Awards 2012, Miranda Lambert, Blake Shelton, and Taylor Swift win top honors. And this is brought to us on thewashingtonpost.com. Taylor Swift took home the Entertainer of the Year award Sunday night at the Academy of Country Music Awards, a win that was expected for her fellow nominees and fans. And even Swift, who typically displays expressions of sincere shock when her name is called at award shows, was less than taken back as usual. Swift displayed none of her normal expressions of astonishment after winning the Academy's top honor for the second year in a row. And in a matter of fact, neither did her competitors, who gracefully, if grimly, acknowledged her as she hugged her way up to the stage, and with millions of albums sold and millions of new fans turned on to country music and turning out to her vote for her, the award had the feel of coronation. "She deserved it," fellow nominee and show host Blake Shelton said. When those announcements came out, who was nominated, I remember saying right then, "I don't think I said I hope Taylor wins because I hoped I would win, but Taylor deserves it. I don't think there's anyone with half a brain that would say otherwise. She has done a lot for us in country music. We are lucky enough in country music to call her one of us, but I am always going to make a fan out of her in my monologues, so she might as well get used to that." So Shelton was likewise awarded one of the evening's top designations, taking the prize for top male vocalist. The win ended Brad Paisley's 5-year run in the category and beat out newcomer Chris Young, who was among a group of 20-something nominees this year. Well, while country's biggest stars remained the top nominees of the awards, Chelsea had 9 and Aldean had 6. Youthful acts like Young and New Artist of the Year nominees Scotty McCreery, you know, the guy from American Idol, Brantley Gilbert, and Hunter Hayes are honing in on the fun. Shelton's wife, Miranda Lambert, won for Best Female Vocalist, her third consecutive win in the category, and more surprisingly, the Eli Young Band won Song of the Year for Crazy Girl. It was a long time coming for the Texas Quartet, whose lead singer Mike Eli exhorted watchers to follow the band by their following their dreams. And Eli told reporters their career was morphed in incredible ways. A few years ago, they were excited to score an interview in a college newspaper. And Sunday night, they were dedicating the win to the wives for their patients. That's pretty good. I like that. I like to thank my whoever else for all the stuff that we do.
If you have any other stories, items, or events you would like mentioned on PCRN, please send an email to parachallengeradio@live.com. Attention, PCR News. And that's all for PCRN. I am your Parachallenge Radio news anchor, Brian Watley. I am the director of Ghost Hunters of the South, located out of Mobile, Alabama. You can find us on the web at www.ghots.net. That's GHOTS.net. And you can email us through contact@ghots.net. Our team is a proud TAPS family member. Thank you for tuning in, and it's time for Lights Out.
You're listening to Parachallenged Radio with your host, PC, a Jackalope Radio production.
We're back. We have a great second half for you. If you haven't ever heard of Sean Whalen, you must be living under a rock, because he's like, he's every one of the movies that I love. Most of my favorites he's in. I mean, if Twister doesn't tell you anything, Jury Duty, Carol Wayne Bishop. Oh my God. That was like one of my favorite movies. I love Pauly Shore. And just having Sean in there just made it extra cool. He's so, you're such a versatile actor, Sean. I just have to start out that way. You can just transform to just about any character.
Thank you so much. It's kind of a journey of the character actor. I've heard that from a really good friend who was a writer on TV shows and said, you know, you guys are the luckiest guys because you get to do everything. And we were actually going over everything I've done. I've done stuff on Disney Channel. I've done stuff on soap operas. I've done stuff on B-movies. I've done stuff on huge movies. I've done stuff on comedies, horrors, dramas, one-hour dramas on TV, half-hour comedies, filmed half-hour comedies, sitcoms. I mean, he's actually right. I mean, if you are a hot woman, you're probably going to be on a TV show or a movie. And that's, you know, one type of TV show and a movie, unless you're blessed to be comedic. And, you know, that's pretty rare. So I'm pretty lucky. Character actors get to do it all.
It just floors me when I look at your IMDb. I'm like, wow, I forgot he was in that one. Oh, that was one of my favorite ones. And I'm going down the list going, oh, The People Under the Stairs is like a longtime favorite movie for me.
Yeah.
And it was just on TV again. I want to say what was right
like a couple
after
weeks ago, right?
Yeah, right after I got in touch with you, and I'm like, really? That's awesome. So I was like, okay, yeah, he's going to write me back and tell me he'll be on the show, mm-hmm, just because I got a sign from
There you go.
So yeah, it was just really exciting. And when you sent me the friend request, I was like floored. I'm like, really? Wow.
Well, so, it's funny, I mean, just reaching out. You know, my friend, a good friend of mine said, you've got to reach out to your fans. And, you know, I always had all these requests for so long, and I thought, oh, no one really cares about this stuff. It's not just a big deal. And when I started doing it, it's been kind of an amazing ride. I started getting back into the convention circuit again, going out and doing cons, and actually met some people and started to help rewriting a script for somebody. I'm actually going to act in a couple people's movie that I met, you know, so it's been pretty exciting.
It really blows my mind how many movies you've been in. I just can't get over that. And not just the movies, but like you said, you were in Disney films and sitcoms and all kinds of different things. Now, I don't recall seeing you in Lost, but it is listed here.
I was in the first two episodes in season 5 and the first two episodes in season 6. Season 5 was, if you're a Lost fan, they'll know me as Neil Frogert, the guy who took the flaming arrow through his chest at the
beginning of the season. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, that was me. That the was annoying you. Guy. As Josh Holloway said, who plays Sawyer, said, you know, annoying, agitating people, they don't last long on this island. Yeah, I guess not.
Oh, and you have a couple of really interesting, awesomely funny videos on YouTube as well.
Oh,
I was checking those out this afternoon. I had to share a few. And just laughing, just crazy. But it's so fun. I mean, it's funny. Your personality is off the hook, and it's very contagious.
And go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
Well, they're both, the two recent ones that I've done are both old Groundling sketches that I just wanted to put on film for posterity, and the Dorothy 50 Years Later is my most popular so far, and I'm actually developing that into something. I just don't know what yet. But I came out of that movie with, they re-released it like 25 years ago, and they put it all in theaters, and my friends and I went to go see it. And I came out, and I thought, God, this movie stinks. And everybody said, why? And I said, oh, no, I'm not meaning the movie itself. The movie itself is great, but the ending is so depressing. And they said, why? Why is the ending so depressing? And I said, well, she's back at home in black and white, which kind of sucks anyway. She's surrounded by people who, when she says, and you were there, they all look at each other and go, like, this girl's crazy. She's with, you know, older people who aren't her parents, who are probably not going to last very long. She's, you know, the dog issue has not been solved. The dog was taken away, and they, you know, it's not like they said, and they said you can keep your dog. You know, that woman's going to come back and kill the dog. And everybody thinks she's nuts, and, you know, what she thinks is the greatest backyard in the world is like a dust bowl. And I thought, God, it's just awful. And so I thought, I wonder what would happen to her. And so that was what that video is. And if you go check it out on my YouTube page, Dorothy 50 Years Later, it's her 50 years later, bitter, drunk, and stuck in Kansas.
And until I watched that, I had never thought of that myself. It was like, yeah, whoa!
Yeah.
Life really sucks sometimes.
Yeah. Reality struck poor Dorothy at a young age.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. That one had me rolling this afternoon. It was hilarious. But, yeah. I had talked with you in a message, and I don't mean to stutter. And I'm just kind of in shock that you're actually on my show. But
Thank you.
I am.
Thank you very much.
And if you can see me, I'm blushing. But anyway, we had talked in a message about, you know, you were kind of wondering what we do and what, you know, the interview was going to be like and things like that. Like I explained to you in there, we are basically a paranormal radio show. It started out that way. We're kind of branching out and feeling out in different directions and just want to share, you know, cool people with our audience and really just put it out there for anybody who's interested. But, you know, I did want to ask you, and as I told you in that message, I wanted to give you the floor to share any paranormal stories that you might have had, you know, in your life so far.
Well, we have one that is family lore, which when I was young, I was three. I have an older brother who was a year older at four, and another sister was six, and another older sister was eight. And my mom and dad, my dad was stationed down at the UN down there in Argentina. So we all moved to Argentina, and we moved into a big Spanish-style house. The dollar was great, so we had maids, and it was a big old house. But I guess the previous owner did not like Americans. And so my mom one night felt breathing next to her, and she was disoriented, thinking, wait, did I sleep on the wrong side of the bed? And turned. Nothing was there. Another night they heard footsteps in the hallway a few times. They had some weird light flickerings sometimes. But they didn't really put it up to anything until one night they heard a humongous crash. And they ran downstairs, and there was a huge portrait of the previous owner that had fallen from the mantle above the mantle on the ground, but it didn't fall in a way where it, you know, no string was broken, no nail was broken, and it didn't fall in a way that you would hear, you know, ka-thunk, you know, several bumps as it hit the mantle and crashed down and maybe tumble over. It was like 20 yards in front of the mantle, face down, as if someone picked it up off the mantle, off its nail, sorry, and threw it on the ground face down. The glass was still kind of intact, and my mom and dad both decided to put it back in its place with reverence, and they were kind of making a gesture saying, we still respect you, we're not going to get rid of this. You know, even though it was cracked, they put it back where it was, and it stopped after that. So it was kind of interesting, but I was much too young to experience it, but that's our family legend with some paranormal activity.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Very so, awesome. You know, they kind of solved it by respecting the entity, if it was there, to say, you know, we respect you, we're going to put this back, and everything's good. Leave us alone. So.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you had any? Oh, I'm sorry, Brian.
That was fun. I was going to ask Sean, what was his favorite project he has been working on?
One of my favorite projects, I mean, you know, People Under the Stairs is definitely one of my favorites, only because it was my first movie. It was the first lead role I ever had, and I remember going to the last callback and being in a room with a bunch of guys in mm-hmm. dirty, scrawny tank tops, and our hair is all messed up. And, you know, each guy going into Wes's office, Wes Craven's office, and hearing them, you know, scream and giggle through the walls. And then it was your turn, and, you know, I screamed and giggled and crawled along the floor and cried and died, and, you know, it was a weird audition. And then when I got the part, it was really amazing. I thought, oh, my God, there's so many different mm-hmm. types in there. And then he was just so nice, very friendly, very nurturing, and I didn't have to learn any lines, so that's always good, because I had
yeah.
no time. So. my extra homework of learning lines was nil, so that was really fun too. But that's definitely one that is deep in the heart. And then I think my only other one would be Never Been Kissed with Drew Barrymore, because she was so awesome to work with and so supportive. That was supposed to be one line, my part in Never Been Kissed, and it grew into, you know, a part that was throughout the film. So. That was a really, really fun movie. And, you know, I got to do comedy, which is I love to do. I love to do
comedy.
That's
a good movie.
Yeah, yeah. And it did horribly. It opened against Matrix and, like, got trounced in the box office. But it's one of these ones that it's one of these. And I remember so being so naive. I'm like, what's the Matrix? No one's going to go see that. And oops. I learned the hard way. Because we opened in, you know, fourth place. And but it stuck around. That movie has stuck around, and it stood the test of time.
Yeah, so. You still catch it on cable channels and things every now and again. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So those two were kind of two of my favorites, and I love doing Twister, just because it was such a big movie, you know, and being a part of such a huge carnival that we, you know, rolling through the Midwest, and we'd set up a camp somewhere in some field, and then. You know, be there for 2 weeks and then pack it all up and go somewhere else. And, you know, all we do is driving around in dirt roads over and over and over again. So it was definitely a wild ride.
Definitely a must watch every spring.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. As we get into tornado season now. But, I mean, now there is no tornado season. It seems like tornado season is all year round now. It seems
exactly.
Like.
My girlfriend was just talking to me about watching Twister when storms come up and closing all the curtains, call it Redneck IMAX.
Yeah, exactly. That's awesome. And I saw, you know, a dark cloud going overhead that was on the radar, and they said it was coming our way. And I remember walking out on the porch and seeing it come, and a huge dark cloud. And it was at the very, very prenatal stages of becoming a Twister, but the cloud was actually circular and slowly turning. And I was like, wow, this is trippy. And I had just seeing the CGI test that the guys brought down from Industrial Light and Magic to show us, and I was like, that was fake, but this above my head is real. And that's a little creepy. But it passed by and didn't become a funnel cloud. So,
wow.
There you go.
Men in Black, Charlie's Angels, the list is just incredible.
Halloween 2, yeah. I might
exactly. Yeah. And even a Paperboy in a Batman flick, if I remember right, Todd?
Yeah, Batman Returns.
Yep, Batman Returns, yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
But the best thing about him, he's an Iron Maiden and a Star Wars fan, correct?
Yes, definitely a Star Wars fan. And the Iron Maiden shirt was just this great shirt that I've had for years for auditions when I had to play a kind of a skinny rock and roll dude, and I've kept it all this... I mean, of course I'm a fan of Eddie, but I actually don't know much Iron Maiden music.
Oh, man.
Blasphemer!
I know, I'm sorry. But I love that shirt.
Yeah.
That's got to count for something.
Yeah. I mean, come on, who doesn't love Eddie?
Eddie rules.
Yeah.
Eddie rules, come on.
Man, you should play Eddie. We should have you come out and do an Eddie movie.
See? That's what I'm talking about.
That'd be awesome.
The story of Eddie.
How was it working on, like, Waterworld? Because that movie's, to me... an underrated classic, and a lot of people, you know, they the critics weren't kind to it. They were, and I don't understand that because I went and saw it when it first came out opening weekend, and I just had a blast with Waterworld. I thought it was a lot.
Yeah, I think the reasoning was everybody loved Road Warrior, and there was such a love in the critics and fan circuit of Road Warrior, and Waterworld was basically Road Warrior on the water. And I think that's why people were like, look, you're no Mel, Kevin Costner, you're no Mel Gibson, and the outlying characters weren't as interesting as the guys in Road Warrior. So I think that's where it was. When I read it, I remember getting the script and reading it, and I go, oh, this is Road Warrior on the water. And I think that's why people were so reticent to give it a good review and embrace it as something new and fresh, because I think they just felt it was kind of a retread. And I think it had its own merits. I thought it was super cool. I mean, my God, I had the best time because, they paint you up like a crazy person and they put you on this crazy jet ski and they're like, they taught me how to ride a jet ski and they said, oh, you have a training session for 2 hours to learn jet ski. Well, you learn how to ride a jet ski in 10 minutes. And then they said, well, we got 2 hours, just go and play around. So I'm driving around Hawaii in a jet ski that's painted all black while I'm all painted black as well and being a crazy person. And the guy, I said, well, what can't I do? And he goes, well, nothing. We have several of these, so you can't, even if you break one, we got another one. So I was like, what? This is awesome. So I just went nuts riding around, on a jet ski and then, but then I had to shoot at night and the water was warm and great. And it was really fun. It was a really, really fun shoot. Yeah, and my wife got to come. So we spent, we just came a few days early, stayed a few days later, and really made it a vacation. So it was pretty fun.
I got to tell you also, speaking of movies, and I'm not trying to take over the show, Kathy. I'm sorry.
No,
I just got excited.
No. Go for it, Todd.
It's the not only do I love Waterworld, I just watched another one. Just came out on Blu-ray, and I watched it last week, and I just absolutely love this movie. And this is going to be a shocker to a lot of people, because I'm the horror movie guy and the comic book guy, and I'm just the nerd. But I love the movie Never Been Kissed, and you have a pretty substantial part in that.
Yeah, I was just saying that was a really important one. The story behind that was it's such a weird thing. I was in the Got Milk commercial, and I was told by a friend who was a delivery person that at Drew Barrymore's production company, they had a headshot of me up in their production company. And I was like, a headshot of me? And they said, yeah, it wasn't like for a role or anything. It was just kind of out there on their bulletin board. And I thought, well, that's cool. So I decided, out of the blue, to send them milk and cookies and just say, hey, my name's Sean Whalen. I heard you had my picture up. Glad to know your fans, but I just wanted to say hello. And Nancy Giovanni and her producing partner, who's now married to Jimmy Fallon, called me up and said, oh, my God, we've always been a fan since the milk commercial. We'd love to meet you. And I remember driving down that day to her office, and we talked about a couple of movie ideas, and then I remember walking out of her office, and Drew was right there. She's like, oh, my God, because I was standing right next to the picture. And we became, friendly, and they were doing this movie, Never Been Kissed, and there was a part of an assistant that wiped his nose on a message for her and handed her a message, and she was bummed because it had a booger on it. And that was it. That was the part. And so Nancy said to me, what do you want to do with this role? And I said, look, I think it's funnier if this guy is at a, crappy newspaper office. He's got no power. He's got nothing. But he thinks he's like a super rad business person. So, the Armani suit, the headset, and thinks he's the greatest guy in the world. And so that shot of the opening of the movie, her walking into me, is the first shot of the very first day that the cameras were rolling and the first producing job Drew Barrymore's ever had. And when the cameras rolled, I just started shooting out all this stuff, making up these improvs that I kind of jotted them down beforehand, but I thought, well, why not? And they were laughing behind the camera, and Drew was like, that's great. And her producing partner, Nancy Giovanni, was like, wow, this is really awesome. This is really funny. And, they said, just keep writing stuff and bring it to us and we'll approve it and keep going. And so the character just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And it was really, really just one of the greatest things ever, because I would just write my own stuff, show it to those guys. They'd say, we like this, we like this, we like this. No, not that one. And it would just get bigger and bigger. And then the first day, they said, hey, we want to get a shot of you, you know, picking your nose and putting the booger on the piece of paper. And me, Drew and Nancy and I were a little confused, and they said, well, you know, it's in the script. And Drew said, well, it's kind of not the character anymore. And they said, no, but we should have one in the can. And she turned to me and she said, Sean, do you want to do that? And I said, look, I don't want to get in a fight with you and the director. It's, you know, it's your guy's call if you want. She said, no, this is your character. You create it. Would this guy pick his nose, put it on a piece of paper, and hand it to him? And I said, probably not. He thinks he's too good for stuff like that. And she said, I'm not going to shoot it. And they said, well, the director was a little flustered and said, well, we have to shoot one. She goes, no, because if I shoot it, then somebody at the studio might say, oh, I think that's funny, and put it in the movie. And that goes against all the work Sean did, and that's not fair to him. So we're not going to shoot that. We're going to let Sean develop this character as he wrote it. And I was like, oh, my. And that was the first day she was a producer. She had to make a producer call within the first hour. She'd never been a producer. And it was the right one to make, you know. It was really, really cool of her to do that and stick her neck out on the first day. And that's how that character got bigger and bigger. And it's one of my favorites because, you know, I got to create it myself, so.
Well, that's awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah, she was really, really great to work for. So,
what was it like working with Pauly Shore?
Pauly Shore was fun. He just, you know, he was busy because he was the star of it. So I didn't really do a lot with him until, I guess, the studio really liked my character, and they wrote an extra scene for me when he comes and dresses me up as a woman or something. I forget the added.
Yeah. I love that movie, and you were perfect for that role.
Yeah, it was really funny, because awesome. after the milk commercial and people on the stairs, everybody was trying to give me roles where I don't say anything. Because I think they thought I was a mute or something. That was another one. I mean, if I didn't do that extra scene, the whole thing would have been me just doing looks and things. So
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that was really, really fun. And I remember hanging out in his dressing room one day, and he was explaining, you know, the rules of comedy. And I was like, wow, I'm getting the rules of comedy from Pauly Shore. This is kind of interesting. So it was really cool to like have that in your memory banks as like a comedy lecture from Pauly. So it was very cool.
Awesome. Is there another favorite movie that you, or even a regular show that you did that you really enjoyed?
Yeah, I did a show called Unfabulous on Nickelodeon. That was really fun because two of my friends were running it, which was really great. And I really like doing Bold and the Beautiful. I've done that on and off for several years, and it's a crazy thing doing soap operas, because you walk in there and they don't have time for anything, and they don't care if you mess up your lines as long as you're moving the story forward. So my first day, I had 45 minutes to do 25 pages, and just for perspective, you usually 25 pages is done in a week, and they wanted me to do 25 pages of all technical jargon in 45 minutes, and I had to get it done by 5 o'clock, because if I wasn't done by 5 o'clock and it was done perfectly, then they'd have to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to keep the studio longer, and everyone would get pissed off, and it would throw their budget in the toilet and everything. And so they started me at 4:15, and I had to nail it in 45 minutes, and it was all technical jargon. But I did, and thank God I did it with 10 minutes to spare. I did it in 35 minutes, and they did like 6 scenes, you know, one after the other, just knocking it out.
No pressure at all there, huh?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It was my first day, too, and the actress who actually fought to get me the role, her name was Ashley Jones, she said, oh, yeah, and, you know, and if you do well here, they'll bring you back, and if not, they won't. I thought, oh, God. So, yeah, it was all this pressure. It was crazy, but for some reason, I always do okay. I mean, I get more scared thinking about doing it than actually doing it. When I'm in there and I have to do it, I always kind of rise to the occasion and do it. So that was actually really fun. And so that character has recurred on and off for the past, you know, 5 years. And last year I did a big storyline, which was really fun. So so it's weird that talking about me doing everything, I get people coming up with tattoos all over their body going, Roach! And then I get little kids going, you were on Nickelodeon! And then I get old you know, ladies and moo-moos going, you're not bold and beautiful. So, so it's all the different avenues, you know. So it's been really fun.
Wow. Very cool. It definitely sounds like it's been a lot of fun. I mean, the experiences alone, just from this list on IMDb, are just mind-boggling.
Yeah, I mean, hey, acting is great when you're doing it. It's always just sucks trying to get the next job.
Exactly right.
You know, I mean, your ratio is pretty low from audition to what you actually book, so you're auditioning a lot and getting rejected a lot. So it's like a baseball player, you know. You're striking out probably more than you're getting hit. So
what do you enjoy doing in your downtime?
Well, I really love spending time with my kids. I have two daughters, and we just have a great time together. I know I'm the youngest of four, and I've seen them parent their kids, and my daughters are 11 and 8, and I know that this time is fleeting, that, you know, pretty soon they'll be embarrassed by me and not want to hang out with me, and which they're supposed to do as teenagers. They're not supposed to like us. That's fine. But I think that's the most important thing, really trying to spend time with them. And we love to go to the beach, and I love to write and read, and I love dancing. I love to go dancing, but I never get to go as an old man around here. I'm not going to go to the 20-something clubs in the Sunset Strip, and they'd never let me in anyway. So, I mean, just kind of spending time with my family is really, really the best thing. And that involves, obviously, a lot of things, helping them with their homework and you know, playing outside with them and taking trips with them and just really enjoying it. Because, as people say, their kids are older and gone to college. They're like, enjoy it while it lasts. It goes by so fast. So
definitely don't blink. Yeah. I don't know how mine is turning 18 next month. Yeah. I have no idea how that happened.
Right, right. And you know, and then they're off, and you think, wow, where did that go? So
it seems like the older you get, the quicker it goes by, too.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You can, you know, someone told me it's spring of 2012. I just look at them in shock. I can't believe it. But I also, honestly, recently, like I said, is actually getting on Facebook, meeting fans, and, you know, really putting the creative stuff out there now, too, as you saw from my videos. I'm actually getting some pretty decent actors, Danny Roebuck and Bruce Greenwood, and these guys who have been friends of mine for a while, calling me up going, I want to be in the next Dorothy video. I'm going to work on that. So Danny Roebuck's actually going to be involved in my next one. So if you don't know Danny Roebuck, he's from Lost and many different, he's in a lot of Rob Zombie movies. If you looked him up, you know who he was. That's also really fun in my spare time, and I'm a big reader too. So I love to read.
you have VS coming out, or Versus?
Versus is an independent movie. I did Laid to Rest, and from Laid to Rest, I met Rob Hall, who wrote and directed it, and then I met Jason Trost and his sister Sarah Trost, and through them I met their brother Brandon Trost, who. They did a movie called The FP, which is now out in theaters, which is really great. It's a great 80s throwback movie. But I met them. They put me in The FP. Jason then put me in Versus. And that's just being sold right now. And then I'm shooting their new movie this week. So they are two kind of hit filmmakers. They work with Lucas Till a lot, who was the boyfriend in the Miley Cyrus movie, and was in X-Men First Class, and they do a lot of independent movies, and it was actually through them, because their brother Brandon is a DP. He's shooting Seth Green's directorial debut, and he was on the set of Halloween 2, and Rob Zombie said, oh, let me see your movie, and he showed him the movie and saw me, and he's like, oh, I love that guy, that guy's great. And so Rob Zombie called me up, and I flew out and did Halloween 2 for a week with him, and we've remained friendly, and I guess I ran into somebody who's like, hey man, Rob Zombie's showing your videos to everybody.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome, and so I didn't get to do his last movie. He was like, oh, I'm so sorry. There was no real part for you, but I'm going to keep you in mind. And so, I mean, it's kind of funny how things go. It's really about being on sets and meeting people, just like anything. And I've realized through Facebook, I think I was more nervous thinking, you know, I don't want a bunch of people who really don't care about, you know, what you're doing or anything. And it's just not the case. People are really fascinated. And so once I started friending people and meeting people, reaching out on the internet, it was really great. I mean, people have been so nice and supportive. And, you know, you think, who wants to, you know, talk to a has-been actor like me? But they don't.
Oh, come on.
No, I mean, you know, in town you think that, but in the world people think you're great, you know? So, I mean, yeah. Not that the town thinks of me that way. I'm just saying, you know, actor's ego, right? If you're not working every day, you think, oh, it's over, you know? So,
right.
And I've had to do my share of side jobs and things in the past, you know, 10 years or so to keep bills afloat. So, I mean, everyone does, so.
Right.
You know, it's the fallacy to think, like, just because you're in a movie, you're making tons and tons of money, and you don't. So you're just out here to get a job just like everybody else. So it's really humbling and really great to meet everybody on Facebook. So if you're listening, you can friend me. I'm always open to meeting new people. So.
Awesome. Yeah, he answered my message, so
yeah.
Must be.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Well, it's so great to, you know, I mean, who would have known I'd be on a paranormal radio show?
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly. Exactly. Maybe we can broaden your horizons and maybe you
exactly.
can hook up with Rick McCallum and Kane Hodder and go do some ghost hunting in Hollywood.
Yeah,
you know,
there you go.
Who knows?
So. I know, that stuff creeps me out, though. That's what really, someone wrote me there, they're like, so you love ghost hunting? And I was like, you know, and what's your favorite horror movies and things like that? Like, I saw Paranormal Activity 1, and my wife was literally, after a couple weeks, she's like, you're never seeing any of these movies again. You know, I'd be up late watching TV. She's like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, I just want to watch some TV a little bit longer. And, you know, she's like, ugh. Well, those are the things, because I actually had an interview a couple weeks ago. As I said, what creeps you out? And my wife and I are completely opposite. She could never see, you know, Halloween or, you know, movies where there's a scary person, physically a human chasing you. My fears were always Exorcist, you know, Paranormal Activity, things that I have no idea how they get. It's something I have absolutely no control over. I'm kind of a control freak. So those are things I have no control over. At least with the big guy, I think, you know, I don't know why, I think I could do something, or he'd go to jail or get shot or...
Mm-hmm.
But the creepy things that, you know, come through the different worlds and stuff like that really creeps me out. So believe me, I have invited people like, come and ghost hunt with us. And I was like, no, thank you. not interested. Let them stay where they need to stay.
Yep. Don't want anything following you home, huh?
No, that's exactly what I said in the interview. I said, I have no interest in having some demon follow me home because, you know, I opened the wrong door in the house. So,
I think what would be worse than having a demon following you home is like seeing like one of those little kids just standing there staring at you in the mirror or something.
Oh my god, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and so I mean I never have seen Paranormal 2 or 3. And people who were scared by it were like, don't see it. You know. Some people think they're lame. Some people get scared by them, who knows, but it's not my thing. I'd rather do you know, I always say I'd rather act in these things than see them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You kind of write them off after you've acted in them and say, well, let's, you
know. When you do, yeah, when you do it a lot, it's actually kind of interesting. You find, boy, I saw Centipede 2, and I was halfway through, and I was like, wow, this is rough. And, you know, there was a part where they were leaving a little baby in the car and killing the parents, and I thought, that's just my father thing, you know, right now. I'm a dad, and I go, oh, I can't see this. You know, it was also like 1 a.m. and I needed to go to bed anyway, but I was like, either I'm going to save another hour and be tired and watch something that I know this is a little rough, or I'm just going to get an extra hour of sleep. So, it was a little rough. But I mean, I love watching the special effects and how they actually, you know, I love shooting it and then seeing it and then seeing how they actually put it together. I love that part. That's really fun. And, you know, a fun horror movie, you know. I'm always into that. So, People on the Stairs is such a weird one, and it's so unique.
I have yet to see a movie that even mirrored that. Which is
no,
great,
it is. I mean,
usually,
it's so out of the box, and
yeah,
I'm actually
it really
flying
is.
Up. I'm flying out. Flying up to Denver to do. I'm going to meet fans, and there's going to be a screening of People Under the Stairs. I'm doing a Q&A afterwards. I'm doing that on May 2nd, and it's cool because someone called me and said, "Oh, it's on TV," and I said, "You know what? I want to wait and see it in the theater. I haven't seen it in the theater since it came out in '91,
mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be. That's going to be really wild to check that out. So I just remember when I saw it in a theater in L.A. and I went with my fraternity brothers who were there, and they heard me going, "Ooh," through the walls. They're like, "It's Sean drunk." They just all started laughing. You know, the whole theater erupted in laughter because they were like, "That just sounds like wasted Sean Whalen. We know that guy."
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, and it was one of a kind movie, and it's, you know, and we've actually heard coming down the pipe some of these things out on the news that there's actually some people that are kidnapping people and keeping them in their house and stuff like that. And
yeah.
I heard these stories, I was like, that's the first movie I thought of. I was like, man, this is like People Under the Stairs.
Yeah, and it's so strange. I mean, they've talked about a remake for years. You know, last 3 years they've been trying to get it remade. And Wes Craven's behind that too. I guess he's exec producing and trying to, you know, get that made again. But I think that one is so strange that I don't know. I think it'd be hard to remake that anyway.
You know? Well, it's a classic, and I think, you know, Hollywood's going. In my opinion, Hollywood's going a little bit overboard with the remakes. I've heard something about they're going to remake Raiders of the Lost Ark, and they're remaking Evil Dead, which is blasphemous. You know?
Yeah. Evil Dead, that's rough.
Yeah, I mean, you can't exactly replace Bruce Campbell, you know. But
no, and is Sam Raimi behind that? See, that's interesting.
Yeah.
He might be, though.
Yeah, it's. I think it's... you hear stuff coming out of the rumor mill and stuff like that, but it's...
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, right now, Hollywood is owned by corporations where it never was. So a corporation who runs, you know, a food division or a biochemical division and then their entertainment division, they go, well, the entertainment division is my highest risk and my least guaranteed income. So why am I going to spend a ton of money on that? And if I do, I'm going to spend money that has less risk. So what has less risk? Name value and remakes and, you know, huge books. You know, The Hunger Games was a huge book series, so that was kind of a no-brainer. And Harry Potter and, you know, comic books, you know, Marvel being bought by Disney. Marvel and Disney, that seems to me very strange.
Yeah.
But that is, you know, they have a bunch of material already out there that is already tested. They're not testing something super brand new, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, and there's real, so many people in from just their fan bases and stuff, you know.
Yeah. And they'll go to say, you know, they knew that people would go to see Halloween to say, I hate it or I love it, you know?
Mm.
Or they're going to go just to see what they did, what Rob Zombie did, you know?
Exactly.
Just out of curiosity. So they know that there's a, you know, ticket sold regardless. So, and that it's a interesting thing that's happening in Hollywood. Everything's a remake or redoing stuff, but it's not working. The tickets are down, you know?
Yeah. So
hopefully people, they're getting the message saying, you know what, we do actually want new stories. We do want you to put the work in and develop something new. Like, I saw the Spider-Man trailer and I thought, I just saw this. It's not that long ago, especially with DVD life and HBO, and, you know, it's really not that long ago that we saw Spider-Man. So a new Spider-Man is so strange to me.
Yeah, man, it's...
I'm not that interested in it.
Yeah, I kind of thought they kind of jumped the gun a little bit on that, too. And that's, you know.
Yeah, and then at least the Batman one was so long after Tim Burton's, and it was such a different and fresh take, you know.
Well, they had to do something because Joel done trashed the whole franchise with his nipples on his suits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was horrendous. If I saw any more people painted in black light paint, I was going to kill myself.
Exactly. I tell you, I loved Burton's vision. To this day, it's still just a little bit, for me, Keaton is just a little bit better. than the new ones. I love Keaton. I love him a lot. I've got his cowl sitting here looking at me here in the studio. My buddy at Warner's hooked me up. So, yeah, I absolutely love that one. I got to ask you to do us a favor here, man. You are the man, Sean, and we would love to get like a little bumper for you for the show.
Absolutely.
Because that would be fantastic to be able to play that in our commercial breaks.
What do you want me to say?
Well, I'm going to leave that up to you. You're creative. The show, of course, as you know, is Parachallenged Radio, and you can say it however you want to say it, and have some fun with it. And as long as you want, as little as you want. It's all up to you.
Okay. Hey, this is Sean Whalen. You're looking... Take two. Hey, this is Sean Whalen. You're listening to Parachallenged Radio. It creeps in the night and under your skin, but you have to listen.
Yay, listen to that.
Yay, that was awesome. Yay.
All right.
Very nice, Sean.
Go. Threw that out
there.
Thank
you so much, Sean.
Hey, no problem, guys, and thank you for having me. I really appreciate your time.
Well, yeah, it was really awesome,
man. We'd love to have you back. We really would love to have you back, Sean, anytime you want to come on and share what you've got coming up or what's coming out.
Or anything, just drop me a line, and
we'll get you on and let everybody know what you're up to.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. Hopefully I won't have any scary stories to tell you about stuff going on in my house.
You tried not to send
me. If you do, we got people we can hook you up with.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, don't send me any demons over the phone line, please.
Yeah, there you go.
We got them all caged up. All right. We'll talk to you later. Thank you so much.
Have a great night, guys.
You too.
We'll see
you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Oh, my gosh. Was that awesome or what?
That was awesome.
That was awesome. Killer.
It was awesome.
Worked for people under the stairs. How cool was that?
I'm still grinning. I think I was grinning the whole show. But definitely incredible. Thank you, everybody, for joining us, the chat room. Everybody that's tuned in and not in the chat room, you should really join the chat room. There's some really awesome people in there. ParaChallengeRadio.com. Every Tuesday night, you can just go sit in there, have a nice conversation about what we're talking about. Throw your questions out there for our guests and just have a good time.
Set us bell. Take your shoes off. Y'all, come back now. You hear?
You're so weird.
Get your ghost on.
Oh, you're naughty. But anyway, we'll be back again next week. You can count on it. We got a great show for you. What's coming up on Night Watch, Todd?
Man, we got Margie K here to talk UFOs, and we've got
the MUFON lady.
Yeah, she's awesome, and we've got a local paranormal group that's coming in for the first time. And we're going to talk to them about some things going on here in Missouri. So that'll be a lot of fun. They're actually going to be in studio with us. It'll be a hoot, I think.
Awesome. Awesome sauce. I'll be tuned in as usual. And if you want to just hang out in the chat and listen to Jackalope Radio or Night Watch Radio here on Jackalope Radio, please feel free. And until next week, everybody, be good to each other.
And yourselves.
See ya.
Yay! Hold on, I gotta hit the button. There we go. Now, yay!
Parachallenged Radio is a Jackalope Radio production, simulcast on ASPRN. Join us in the chat at www.parachallengedradio.com, or you can go to jackaloperadio.com in the shows area and click on the Parachallenged Radio banner.